Hi, and welcome to Uniquely Wired. This is a podcast for people with ADHD, for people who have people with ADHD in their lives. And I'm your host, Shun Prochaska, and I have ADHD. I'm currently training to be an ADHD coach. I'm a qualified ICF coach, and I'm fascinated by ADHD and the way our brains are so uniquely wired. I love learning about what makes us tick, about what makes us bored, about what we find challenging, about what we find exhilarating. And I just love it. I am just here for all of that. And in this episode, I'm talking to Finn O'Regan. And Finn is one of the leading behavior and learning specialists in the UK. He's an SEN and behaviour consultant for the Schools Network, and he's a former chairperson of UCAP and the European ADHD Alliance, and he's written several books on the subject too. He provides support and strategies to parents and schools struggling to deal with behaviour challenges, and before this he was a head teacher at a specialist school in London. And the reason Finn is back on today is because he's a man on a mission. He wants to change the D's in ADHD, and I think it's pretty exciting. As you know, the D's in ADHD stand for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So they're not the sort of most encouraging and inspiring words. And Finn would like to change that. And if you want to know what he wants to change them to, then listen in. Listen in, and I hope you enjoy the show. There's lots of other interesting information in there. And yeah, just let me know what you think about it. If you like what you hear, send me a message, write me an email, and tell me what you think. I'd love to hear from you. And without further ado, let's get on with the show. So I just want to get your take on it. Yeah. I know it's a fairly obvious question, but what is your problem with the D's in ADHD?
Okay, my problem with the D's in ADHD are the fact that they're just so negative, and they don't really describe what it is we are really truly wanting to get across. When you say deficit and disorder, it always then appears to be a problem, as opposed to an opportunity. And not only that, it doesn't really give anybody any real basis on which to build any degree of support or really understanding what we're talking about, because a deficit and disorder is basically saying that this person is just not, you know, somewhat right. Whereas we're not saying that this person isn't right. We're saying this person has a different way of seeing the world, reacting to certain situations. And in order for us to understand that, we need to understand some of the developmental differences that that person has in terms of how they interpret the world. And I think once people understand that there's a developmental difference, they stop judging him or her against their peers. They start understanding that he or she, the reason they stand out is because there's a developmental difference in how they perceive and how they interact with our environment.
And so would you say that everyone has a developmental difference, or would you say there's a big difference between, as you say, traditional learners and non-traditional learners?
I think everyone is unique, obviously. But I when it comes to certain criteria, there's a lot of people who have some similar traits, in terms of similar targets. So, most sort of 12-year-olds, I suppose, have reached the target to read like a 12-year-old based on the environment they've been given in order to get to that point. But you'll get some 12-year-olds who will probably still have a reading age of 8, and you'll get some that probably have a reading age of 14, because they have an ability to process information a different way. So I think, and that's what we're talking about with all sorts of areas. So in terms of concentration, again, you will have someone who has, essentially the concentration rate of a 12-year-old based on the criteria we've given them to concentrate for that period of time. But some people can concentrate much more than that, and some people will find that really difficult. And that's what I mean by, so when you have that real skewed area, that means that person will stand out. And as opposed to judging someone for being different because they haven't been, you know, brought up in a certain way, or they're naughty, or they just, you know, they are just sort of doing it to wind someone up. You know, we're not saying that those areas don't take place, but more often than not, there's usually a reason. We always say behavior is a reason. There's a reason behind it. And what's the message? And I think, in my view, having talked about and tried to explain ADHD over the years, I found the deficit disorder element just doesn't get the penny to drop. When you talk about developmental and differences, ears start to prick up and people start judging the child or thinking about the child in a very different way.
It's interesting, like, because I know myself on the course I'm doing now, that the instructor was talking about it, and I think I wrote this to you in the email I sent you about coming on the podcast, about how discussions take place a lot, you know, informally and stuff, about changing the D's or changing the name entirely. And people think, you know, some people suggest, you know, because ADHD is not a deficit of attention, it's a deficit of interest. Mm. And could that somehow be put in interest deficit? But then there's that word again, that deficit word. That's
yeah. Well, it's actually, if we really go for it, I suppose, you know, when the core traits are impulsivity, inattention, and hyperactivity, you could argue that impulsivity isn't even mentioned in the actual term itself. And for me, actually, that is probably the key trait. There was a Russell Barkley is kind of like the godfather of this area, particularly in the US. And he had a term a few years ago called inhibition, or difficulties of response inhibition, RI. But it's a little bit too, I think it's a little bit too abstract that. But, you know, I think it'd be very difficult to get rid of the A and the H, and particularly at this time. I think they're somewhat set, but for the future, I mean, you've got to remember these terms are not necessarily set in stone. You know, what this term has always been around. Once upon a time, it used to be called hyperkinetic disorder, HD, and it was kind of the more extreme form of what we call combined type ADHD now. So these terms do change, but I think that, as I said, there is a precedent for this, because over here in the UK in particular, in many school authorities now, or many authorities, people are not using, they're not calling it autistic spectrum disorder, they're calling it autistic spectrum condition. So, you know, I'm just looking for a little bit of a parity, if you like, really, with that. But I think, you know, like all these things are, you know, it's not something that we are trying to change the world. We're just trying to get people to think a little bit more positively about why people interact and respond differently in group situations. And for me, particularly in schools where these kids are often at risk of, you know, at very best, not realizing their potential, at the very worst, being excluded because, you know, they're so different from the others that we judge them as just being disruptive.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what a difference it could make, you know, if they weren't labeled with those, you know, deficit and disorder. It's, yeah, it feels really big, that change. It feels really exciting, and it feels like the right time to make that change now, because so much is changing and everybody is developing a new sort of, I guess, an acceptance for others. And that's,
yeah, I mean, we have, I mean, you know, we do it. So we're on the cusp of a very exciting time, as you say, because, I mean, the big, you know, the area that I also try and work in is, you know, we use the term neurodiversity. I think I was saying to you some years ago, I coined the term, which I called non-traditional learners, dissociate them from traditional learners. But neurodiversity came along. And I think, you know, we've been, and what happens in schools right now, if I go into a staff session, I always ask if I can do something with the kids, because it isn't just about reaching the staff, it's getting the other kids to understand why he or she is different. And because they know they're different, they just don't know why. And it's a no-brainer for the kids, because diversity, they're already there, you know, because they are far more open-minded about race and gender and sexuality and all sorts of things like that, you know, than possibly the adults are. And then when it comes to the neuro stuff, I do it as a little bit of science based on what I used to be a science team, talk about the brain chemicals and, you know, transmitters and that sort of stuff. And they said, oh, right, okay, is that why he or she shouts out, why he puts hand up when he shouldn't do that, why he doesn't always keep eye contact? And they're in it, they're with us. So you've got that D for diversity, which I think is a very exciting time. But neurodiversity has been the last bastion of this. I think it's the others are there. And in schools, which are very much formative now with the whole diversity agenda, neurodiversity is somewhat, you know, the last link in the chain, or maybe not the link in the chain, in many other areas as well, but it's certainly an area that is underrepresented, if you like, really, as others are. And we're not all trying to get onto the stage at the same stage, so to speak, you know, but we are trying just to, what we're trying to do is get everyone to understand why people are different. But you're right about this comes from a story, it was a true story. Many years ago, I went to an ASD meeting, you know, an autistic parents meeting. And I overheard this mother say to another mother, oh, my son doesn't have ASD, he has ADD. And she said, the lady said, well, what does that stand for? She said, I don't know, sir. I think it stands for attention devastation disorder. Because that was the impact that her child had, she felt, on home. But if someone comes along with a word like attention devastation disorder, that already puts into your head that this lad or girl is going to be very difficult. And I think, you know, and those are other D's, aren't they? You know, you've got D's for difficult, you've got D's for defiant, you've got D's for devastation, but you've also got D's for determination and desire. And, you know, and I'd rather be looking at developmental differences and then going with a determination and desire. That's what I would want to be doing. And diversity, if you like, really.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, we spend so much time, you know, focusing on children's, you know, but what they can't do, you know, that's all the children know, that they grow up thinking that that's all they know, and they don't realize that there's a whole other side to them that just hasn't been brought out because the right curriculum wasn't there or the right support wasn't there for them. How do you think this might change, you know, education?
Well, I'm hoping that, you know, again, my big sort of driver in all of this, another D word, is to reduce school exclusions. And I keep harping on about this, that the biggest reason for school exclusion is something called persistent disruptive, another D there, behavior, PDB. And exclusions have gone up here in the UK the last 4 or 5 years by 44% in fixed-term exclusions, that's suspensions, and 35% in permanent exclusions. And the biggest reason is PDB. And you look at what the PDB stands for, it's low-level, impulsive, non-premeditated type behaviours, which are annoying and irritating, and there's a bit drip, 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 I get that. But the point I'm trying to get to is that you have to have 45 days of fixed term exclusions before you get a permanent exclusion. And if the second or third fixed term exclusion doesn't work, I can guarantee you the fourth and fifth isn't going to work. So if people start calling it a disorder, then you move into this kind of cycle of, well, he's just going to exclude him again, he's got this, he's got that. And what will happen is, if someone's excluded, they start thinking, well, the best I can be is the worst I can be, I'm happier out of school than being in school, I'm always on report, then, you know, the circuit's just going to carry on. But if you start saying, oh, what's the reason for this? Is it a difference? You just can't you can't necessarily do maths on a Wednesday afternoon. It's just that's when it's all happening. And is that to do with the fact that he can't process it in the same way as his peers can? Because the problem is we have in schools, and it's not me, it's Ken Robinson, who said that schools are after compliance. You know, whereas they want people to do the same thing, same time, the same stage. And most kids are at the same stage of their age, but kids with ADHD and ASD, they are usually 2 or 3 years either below or behind in certain skills, which means they will stand out. And the irony of irony is that business doesn't want compliance. Business wants innovation. They want people who think differently. They want people who are intuitive. And that's why actually you'll see now some of these big companies, like particularly the tech ones, are really starting to be positively and actively recruiting people who are neurodiverse. And, you know, because they want those different strengths and things. So, you know, it's just about trying to reduce the risk for people who are different in school, and to a certain extent, you know, enhance the potential, not just for the school, for them in school, but for us all as a society, because we need that talent who, you know, to organize and think about and create, you know, ways for us to live our lives.
So do you think that like more support needs to be brought in school, or do you think that like the way teachers are educated themselves, do you think that there needs to be
there? I think that I to be honest with you, I mean, there's a term, right? There's two things really. There was a term that there's a National Association of Special Educational Needs over here some years ago. They said every teacher is a teacher of SEND. Well, that's all very well to say that, but you can't just say that overnight and everyone becomes a teacher. You need to have more awareness, understanding of what we're talking about. So that's one thing. Every school has three, I always think, say a typical secondary school, they've got three types of teachers. You've got those that kind of do the quirky kids. They look at them and think of them as that word, quirky or a bit different, and they work it out, they figure it out. You've got those that really struggle with that difference, you know, that difference too. You've got those in the middle who might. So for me, you know, you're not going to get everyone, but I think what I find is that when you go with the developmental differences, that the penny really drops for that middle. The first third have already got it. The other third will always find that sort of type of child not easy to teach because of different reasons of themselves. And then the middle third is what you're aiming for. If you get the two, if you get the middle third, then you've got two thirds, then you've got momentum, and then you've got a thing. So, you know, in terms of support, yeah, it'd be lovely to have, but it's probably not going to happen. You need to reach out that term and get your middle third. And then the other thing you need to do is, it's not just every teacher being a teacher of SEA, it's every head teacher, every leader of a school also having that same philosophy. If you do that, then not only will you influence the other third, you'll also actively recruit teachers who have that mindset in the first place.
Fantastic. Wow.
That's my dream. My dream.
It's going to start a revolution, Finn.
Well, at least a movement of some type. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
Definitely. That's fantastic. I love it. I love it. So what's your hope then for kids coming up now through primary school if the D's do get changed?
My hope is that, again, you know, I think primary schools are usually getting on board, you know, a bit earlier in terms of teachers tend to know their students pretty well. And, you know, that principle of knowing someone is different is probably, you see him every day, you know, I'm not saying it always works pretty well. I suppose what I'm hoping for is when they move into secondary schools, you know, the seeds are sown that it's not a problem, it's an opportunity. That would be lovely to think that way. But also, you know, when the transition takes place, there's enough kind of insight now into understanding that he or she might not be able to do exactly all the same things as their peers in, you know, in year seven, you know, over here, particularly in the UK. So there might need to be some differentiation going on early, because what happens is, you know, most kids, when they move into secondary school, the first year they try and get through. The second year they're falling behind. By the time they get into year 9 or year 10, you know, that's when really the problems emerge. Most kids are excluded probably year 9. That's that key year. What they've had then is 2 years of failure and not being criticised. And then what happens is the layers all come on, and then they start thinking, well, look, you know, if I can't do this, and I'm being told off I've been excluded, and they start pushing back. Because we do use this term, oppositional defiant disorder, again, another term for you, and pathological demand avoidance. Although, you know, again, that term has less credibility, I believe, than OED. But the bottom line is, I'm not sure whether those terms really exist. You very rarely get someone who starts off with ODD or PDA. It's a consequence of underlying, you know, issues not being sorted out. And usually with ADHD, they call it ODD, but I think it's underlying issues of traits of not being supported, understood, and that's their pushing back. They start thinking, well, I'm going to be the best I can be is the worst I can be. That's the best I'm going to be. And then I think PDA tends to be a certain, you know, similar pushback with underlying issues of autistic spectrum condition. because they've already got that going. So I think for me, you know, that's what my hope is. So we get in early, therefore those layers don't build up. So we reduce that those kinds of pushback behaviors that you see. You know, you're not going to do it for everybody. You know, we've got to be realistic about it. You know, a lot of it still is going to be down to individual schools, you know, the leadership. Obviously, support from home is always going to be crucial. And you know, and someone's a bit of luck, I suppose, really, about how some people can, you know, some people do, come through without, you know, all of the things we're making, because, you know, they have that desire as well. And I think what we know is that some people who are different can also be very, very tenacious and very tough. And, you know, we need to make sure we recognize that as well.
Hmm. Just out of curiosity, how many children in school in the UK with an ADHD diagnosis are medicated?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not sure on the recent figures. I used to have a lot more knowledge of that. I used to be on the circuit a bit when, you know, and I used to be at some of these conferences where I'd be hearing other speakers talk about it. I don't know. I think, the stats that I was aware of, it was usually, we thought of, there was about 4 to 5% of children that had ADHD traits. But it's very hard to get an accurate diagnosis. And of those, you'd be talking about 1 or 1.5%. But the problem is that when you ever see the newspapers talk about medication and the stats on that, what they fail to take into consideration is when they talk about the medication rates going up, it's not so much there's necessarily more people on medication, but the way in which medication is distributed now, you have to have more prescriptions. You used to be issued, I think, 1 or 2 prescriptions a year, but now I think you have to have 4 or 5 prescriptions a year. So what that means is there's obviously more prescriptions. And what happens is the newspapers take get hold of the prescription rates and then they quantify it in terms of people. So if I'm honest with you, as I say, I'm a little bit out of the loop with the actual issue on medication in terms of prescription rates. So I'm not exactly sure, but I do know that those figures are often skewed because it's not actually individuals. It's more prescription rates that are being issued.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. How can people help you with this mission to change the D's?
That's a really good question. Well, I think number one, there's a lot of people coming back right now saying they really like the idea. Some people, I've had some Senkos really encouragingly say, look, you know, parents are just sort of, you know, they are in despair. I'm going to go in a much more positive mindset. I suppose I need to do, I don't know, I need to run some sort of campaign. I need to find, I'm looking to actually try to link up with some ADHD parent associations. I think if I was to work up with them. To work with the educational world is more difficult right now, I think, because there's so much stuff going on. But, you know, I have a platform myself. I do quite a lot of national talks at places like Islington, the TES show and things like that. So you'll be hearing more about this. I think at this stage, what I'm going to do actually is a great is to try and find out a little bit more about how autism got the D changed to C, because it's, you know, many, many areas now calling it autistic spectrum condition. So I think I need to look at how they did that and follow the routes maybe that they use. And and, you know, I'm hoping, if you like, really to, I'm, you know, maybe do some kind of survey myself, which might, you know, then be taken on board by some other ones. I am writing a paper, hopefully in the Times Educational Supplement at some point. So that might help as well. But to ask your question, I'm not quite sure.
And what about, you mentioned about the meantime, about the D's, how you're going to write ADHD before the
Oh yeah, well, I think, I mean, this might be a bit more twee, but just for me right now, in my capacity and in my small way, I'm changing the big D's to little D's while they're deficit and disorder, and I will return them to the big D's of developmental and difference when once that happens. So, you know, I mean, it's a funny old word, ADHD, anyway, because years ago there was, people still refer to it as ADD sometimes for inattentive. They used to have a slash between the AD and the HD some years ago. I think you remember that as well. So it's not the first time that people have tinkered with the term. In a way, it's a funny term anyway, because it's got four letters, and most people have, you know, usually have three, don't they? ODD and things like that, really. In fact, if you go to conferences sometimes, hotels, you'll see people just misread it anyway. They'll have it as AHDD or something, or ADDH or something, because four is the... But anyway, I'm so... In my own little mission at the moment, I'm little D's for deficit disorder, the big D's for developmental indifference.
Great. That's fantastic. Well, I'm going to be watching and very excitedly and with great interest and cheering.
Well, thank you. Thanks for all your support as well. And that means a lot to me. And I think, you know, as I said, what we're trying to do is... we're trying to help support individuals who, you know, who might be struggling and just not being understood, you know, their world. And I think I always say it to parents and to teachers, where you start with this process is, you know, people want strategies. They want me to say what to do with him or what to do with her. Well, you know, and I can offer those, but only after I got them to try and understand how this person is seeing the world. And if we can do that, then, you know, then you have a better understanding about how the support may well, you know, work for them. And I think that's what we've done. I mean, if you take autism as an example, we do understand that those people or people who have those traits, that those people with, there's never, you know, there's no thing as an ASD person, but you tend to start off with the fact, tend to be quite black and white, and, you know, they're not, tend to be literal, and, you know, and they then they're, you know, they don't like a lot of change. So that doesn't mean that justifies everyone that has it, but it gives you a head start point to try and understand their world. If you get to those things, then the other things will flow. And what we want to do with ADHD, for example, is to get that, you know, their behavior, number one, is generally not premeditated, because it's lack of impulse control. And the first time they think about it, they've already done it. And the second thing is that they're not deliberately trying to switch off when you're talking or you know, and you're not boring, but they may be bored, you know. It's just they can't concentrate to the same level as their peers can unless you give them something else to do in order to square the circle, so to speak. So I think if you start with those two areas as a starting point, then I think it doesn't justify what they're doing. If you hit someone, if Jack hits Jim, it wasn't ADHD that hit Jim, Jack hit Jim. Jack didn't make a very good choice and make a different choice. But if you start understanding why people make wrong choices all the time and you help them to try and make better choices, then I think it's a win-win for everybody.
You just listened to Uniquely Wired, an ADHD podcast. I'm your host, Shun Prochaska. And today on this episode, I spoke to ADHD, neurodiversity and behavior consultant, Finn O'Regan. And we spoke about how Finn is on a mission to change the D's in ADHD. And I think it's great. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you want to know more about Finn, you can go on his website, fintonoregan.com, and you'll find loads of resources for parents and for teachers. You'll find articles that Finn has written. You'll find 8 books, I believe, that Finn has written about ADHD. I highly recommend paying his website a visit. That's fintonoregan.com. If you want to know more about yours truly, you can find my website address in the description of this podcast and social media contacts and all of that kind of stuff. And I would like to thank @miserable_Martin, as his Instagram handle is, for the beautiful music for this podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I'll see you next time. Bye.